So my name is Leon Berkelmans. I am the International Economy Program Director at the Lowy Institute. Today we are lucky enough to have Martin Wolfe here with us to talk about Brexit. Martin Wolfe is Associate Editor and Chief Economics Commentator at the Financial Times, and he's here for a brief visit to Australia, but one that perhaps is reasonably healthy given the all-consuming nature of the Brexit debate. So anyway, to start with, Martin, could you briefly lay out the case for Britain remaining in the EU?
Quite difficult to do, actually, because it affects almost every aspect of our economy and society. So I'd start with saying that remaining is the status quo. It's what we are familiar with. It's what we have built our economy around in many ways in our politics and society. And in my view, it's self-evident. It's completely workable. Britain has done, since it joined in 73, really quite well, particularly since the 80s, not just because of joining the EU, but it's helped. We have grown relatively well. Our economy has achieved most of the time full employment. We had a financial crisis, but had nothing to do with the EU at all. We have a voice in the EU, but we're not bound by the single currency. There are many regulations actually in quite controversial areas that don't affect us. So it's just the status quo is by and large very acceptable. And the what we were asked to do is to abandon the status quo for something which is just an unknown. And so the first big reason is there's no reason to change where we are. And the second associated with that is that the opponents of remaining cannot define, because they cannot agree, and even if they could agree, they couldn't necessarily get a clear alternative. So that's the second big problem. We don't know what being out would mean, and that's a very complicated story. We don't know what we would want. We don't know what our counterparts in Europe would offer us. And then we get to the third, which is that most of the alternatives are clearly worse. Either we lose access to the European market in a big way, or if we keep the access, we lose all say in the regulations and laws. We end up in the limbo where we just have to accept whatever the Europeans are proposing because we haven't got a seat at the table. So that would be ridiculous. On the other hand, losing all access to market stake, almost half our trade seems sort, not all except the favorable access, I must be clear, the favorable terms of being inside the single market also seems very disadvantageous. Then we get to the really the political issues. We no longer would have a direct voice in the arrangement that is governing Europe, which will affect us inevitably. Geographically, we are always going to be part of Europe. We can't change that. And by leaving the EU, that would proceed in whatever way it did, probably not that well, without our having any say on matters that concern us a great deal, even if it's only an outsider say on the future of the euro, but also importantly, our relations with the Middle East are affected by European policy, our relations with Russia, ditto. So that puts us in a very difficult situation. My last point on this would be that I do actually believe Britain brings an important voice to European affairs. We have very particular advantage. We have stable political institutions, stable democracy, a generally market-oriented view. People in Europe want us to be in because they welcome our voice and our connections with the rest of the world, particularly the English-speaking world. And if we go, Europe will become more inward-looking, in my view, more German-dominated and less satisfactory. So for these, I think that adds up to about seven reasons. And I think this, therefore, the case for staying in is overwhelming.
Is there some risk, rather, that if Britain chooses to leave, we could see other fragmentation happening in Europe? You mentioned that Germany would become a stronger force. Would that mean that others would seek to have some sort of different relationship with the EU?
I think that's a very, very big question. The answer to that, like with most of these things, is we don't know. We don't know what Britain's arrangement would be. The EU has clearly functioned in the past without Britain for the first 17 odd years. It existed quite happily without us. But the EU of today is different from that. It's enlarged all the way to the east. The western part is less dominant. Germany, of course, being united is much more important. France is less so. I think that there are some countries which already are showing some degree of disenchantment. Here I'm thinking, I don't want to say this would happen. Countries like Denmark, possibly Sweden, possibly, though very unlikely given the history, the Netherlands, would sort of say they would feel more uncomfortable with us out because they're sort of closest in culture and ideology to the British view of things. And Britain is a big power. They would feel more isolated. I think it would strengthen the anti-EU forces in some very important countries. And the most powerful and important of those is France. It's clear that Marine Le Pen is anti-EU. She's quite likely to come top in the first round of the next presidential voting in France. It's early days, but it's quite possible. And she's rather keen on the idea of weakening the EU, leaving the euro. And she might well say, well, Britain's an important country, much like us, very similar status and size. That's an example. We can also be more resistant to European demands, more resistance to Germany, more nationalist. So that's the bigger threat. And then here we're getting to very remote things, but it's clear that Euro-scepticism is rising in Italy and also to some degree even in Spain. Now, on balance, I think these countries remain committed to Europe, but the British departure might lead some forces in those countries to say, well, look, you know, you can leave. It's clear, we can leave. And that might change the dynamics. So I wouldn't predict, but I think they would have to do something to strengthen the EU very powerfully to offset these potential fissiparous tendencies.
Why is this an issue now in the UK? Why now? Why not 5 years ago? Why is this bubbling up right now?
I think that's an incredibly important and interesting question. And I've been thinking about this a lot myself because I've argued in my columns, you know, we don't need this referendum now. We have the option to leave. And it's very important. I didn't mention that in my first answer. We have an option to leave whenever we want. Nobody's going to stop Britain. No one's going to fight to keep us in. So it's not... Ultimately, we are sovereign in this. There are people in Britain who say we're no longer sovereign. This is absurd. Our sovereignty exists in the fact that we can repeal the laws and go out the European Act and leave. So we clearly are sovereign. And the right time to have made this decision is when it's clearly intolerable. You know, we have an option to leave. And so I look at it as an economist. The time to exercise an option is when it's clearly in the money. And it's clearly not in the money now for the reasons I've suggested. So we should wait until it becomes obvious. Some people argue it's going to become a centralized superstate. Well, if that's going to happen, then I too would say we should leave. I don't think it's likely. So why did it happen now? I think there were two things, one of which I understand fully, and one of which is related to that, which is essentially perhaps three things. First, there have been several promises to the British public, which is very important to the Tory right, which were the people who are most adamant about our need to become independent, to have referenda on treaties, and particularly on the last one, the Lisbon Treaty. We never had that for various reasons. It's a complicated story, but we never had it. And they feel cheated. So that's in the background. Second, and I think this is really important, it's something I really sympathize with people because it's a really big issue, which I haven't gone into because it's so complicated. Since the early 2000s, when Europe enlarged to the east, which was necessary after the fall of the Iron Curtain to bring former Central Eastern Europe into Europe, was a great thing. On balance, despite the difficulties, you're trying to solve the problems of division which go back half a century, has been a great success. But of course, these countries were much poorer, much less developed than us. And we actually enthusiastically welcomed them. We decided to go ahead of the Germans and French and let them migrate freely into Britain. And the British government, this is universal, I mean, it's the administration as well as the politicians, massively underestimated the scale of the immigration. And the immigration turned out to be very large. Roughly speaking now, there are about 3 million immigrants from Europe. Now, that includes, by the way, 300,000 Irish, so they would have been there anyway. So it's a slight exaggeration, but there are about 800,000 Poles, for example. It's a large number. I mean, in a country of 3 million, it's a large number. Manageable, but large. And people have noticed this. It's you feel the foreigners around. There have already been a lot of non-European migration, and that's continuing through family reunification. So clearly a lot of people feel that the immigration issue has become, immigration has become sort of unbearable. And we have no control. This is true. We have no control under European regulations of this. And as a result of this, and it's the main reason, the United Kingdom Independence Party, with a relatively personable leader, Mr. Farage, who's a relatively good retail politician, sort of bluff, reasonable, decent sort of fellow, and not a wild-eyed racist sort of person, he started making real inroads. You know, became really popular. And then that leads to the third reason, which is there's Mr. Cameron. He didn't really win the election. He has UKIP breathing down his neck, potentially taking Tories away from him, Tory votes, possibly playing a decisive role in the last election. This, remember, this is, he made this promise before that. And he's got the Tory right, who desperately wants a referendum. So Mr. Cameron's concern in the last parliament is, I've got to get this issue out of this parliament so I can win an election, do well in the election, we'll deal with it later. You know, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. So for this reason, he decided, for these two reasons, dealing with the Tory Eurosceptics who desperately wanted a referendum and saying to the public, you don't need to vote for UKIP, I promise you a referendum. He resolved the problem in the last parliament. And now it's come back to haunt him. And it was done for perfectly understandable political reasons. And it's that timetable, in my perspective, that has brought us to the referendum. No real logic to having it now. There's no necessity. There's nothing to decide now. We've got to wait it till the next treaty. And there isn't going to be a treaty for a long time. And so it's accidents of history are so often.
So if the Brits vote to stay, would this put the issue to bed for quite some time, or could we expect this to pop up again in another 3, 4, or 5 years?
Well, one of the things I've learned is never to say never. So, we're dealing with politics. I think there are two answers I would give to that question. If the vote is decisive, now what is decisive? I don't know. But let's suppose the margin is 10 percentage points, 55-45. I think that is likely to put it to bed for a long time. If it's 50.5 to 49.5, much less certain. So the scale of the margin for remaining is very, very important. And the second question is, will there something new happen in Europe which will require us to respond? If our partners, particularly the members of the Eurozone, decide they need a new treaty in order to establish the Eurozone on a firmer footing in fiscal matters or even a genuine joint political structure. And they try to do that through the EU, that would clearly require a new treaty if it's done through the EU. And the UK would not be part of that. But we would probably, if it's an EU treaty, we'd have to ratify it. And that might well trigger another referendum because the government has said that in principle, any new treaty will require a referendum. Now, it's more likely, in my view, that for this very reason, as happened with the fiscal compact, the Eurozone will decide to create a treaty which just binds themselves within the EU, and then we wouldn't have to ratify anything. It just creates a subgroup of treaty-bound countries within the EU. So that probably won't happen, but that will be a second trigger. And then perhaps one should add, obviously, things can happen quite unpredictably in Europe or in Britain, which make the whole issue really urgent. I can't envisage what that will be, but it's possible. But I think that if the margin of victory for remaining is reasonably large, and I'm modestly optimistic, and no more that it will be, that the issue will be resolved for a decade or so, because I don't expect another treaty which will affect us. But this is very unpredictable.
Okay, Martin Wolf, thank you very much.
Pleasure.